Listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. Next on Black Book Talk, you'll hear host O.B. Hill's 2013 interview with Benny Fields, the son of Wilmer Fields, author of My Life in the Negro Leagues, an autobiography.
Take me out to the ball game. Take me out to the crowd. Now you just buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I never get back. Now it's root, root, root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a crime. Cause it's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out at the old ball game. Hello, this is O.B. Hill on a special edition of Black Book Talk on KBOO. And I have a special guest here today by the name of Mr. Billy Fields. Mr. Fields, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Well, you know, this is a real important day, especially for me. It sort of takes me back to the time of the old Knothole Club with the Portland Beavers in the Pacific Coast League. We're going to be talking about your father, Mr. Wilmer Fields. Could you talk about your father and the old Negro Baseball League and his book that he put out and you're promoting now?
My dad was born in Manassas, Virginia, and he grew up here. He signed with the Homestead Grays at the age of 17, and the Homestead Grays were out of Pittsburgh, Homestead, PA. And his career started in 1939, and with the Grays, he was with them from 39 to 1950. I've heard many stories about when they would have the reunions, about the bus rides between the games, and one thing that everyone touched on, my father, although he played in the Negro Leagues, he was very light-skinned, and a lot of times in the South, when the ball players would be traveling from game to game, and a lot of the restaurants during that period were not allowing. It was white restaurants only. And so they would always send my dad in to maybe buy food and bring it back to the bus. But one time he went in to buy food and the guy looked outside and saw the Homestead Grays bus out there, and then they wouldn't serve him. So that's a story I've heard from many people many times. His career, he also played in Latin American countries and Mexico in the wintertime, but his main team and his first love was the Homestead Grays.
Now, take us back to a time when they were catching buses and traveling between different baseball fields, and they would play, and then according to some of the information I got, they weren't allowed in a lot of the stadiums to come in the front gate. They'd have to enter in one of the gates out in center field. Is that correct?
Well, they didn't have the privileges that the white ball players had. And as far as the public, having public access to, like, the restaurants and, you know, they sort of had their own little tight community, the Negro League, and so when they would play in a stadium, they would play in D.C., they would play some of their home games in Washington, D.C., they would have a big turnout. But yeah, they were sort of taking the back seat to the major league in the white ball players at the time.
So the times were of the nature where people playing in the Negro leagues, in what some people refer to as the Jim Crow era, these teams were actually replicating or duplicating the what was referred to as the major leagues, and in the segregated stadiums.
Yes, they would. The Negro leagues. That sometimes they had, you know, six teams, and it would fluctuate up and down. But they were duplicating what was going on in the major leagues, and you would be surprised at some of the turnouts they had, especially in Washington D.C. on the weekends or Sunday game. They would have 20,000, 25,000-30,000 in the stands to watch the game. So I mean, for being that there were two different leagues at that time, that was a pretty good crowd.
Now, your father was born in 1922 in Manassas, Virginia. Tell me, what type of city or a town is Manassas?
Well, since 1922, Manassas has become a pretty large city, but when he was born here, it was mostly farms. They did have a main street. He had three other brothers and a sister, and it was mostly farming. His father worked at a lumber yard, and he had other things on the side, jobs that he did on the side. But it was a very humble upbringing that he had. But we were always taught that they were very close, that family, and they believed in God, and my grandmother, which was his mother, was the mother of the church. So he was raised in the church, and very strong faith and close family, and everyone believed in education. So it was very important for the siblings to continue their education on into college.
So now, your father, how did he get interested in baseball in such a small community?
They would, I think, he would watch the major leagues and, the Brooklyn Dodgers back then. And he said ever since he was a kid, and we had talked about this numerous times, when he was 8 or 9, he had made his mind up that he was going to play professional baseball. And there was not a team or anything going on in the Manassas area at that time. You would have to travel probably 25 miles toward D.C., and they had a league down there. And he went down there to play, and someone saw him playing in this league and asked him would he be interested in seeing if he could go play for the Grays. And that's how the whole thing got started.
Yes, according to one source here, he says in an interview with your father, I was playing in a sandlot baseball in Fairfax, Virginia.
Correct.
And I was discovered by the Grays. And Vic Harris saw me and arranged for me to pitch in Boston. Now, pitching, that was one thing, but your father had the distinction of being a person who played multiple positions, including third base and the outfield, as well as being in a rotation for pitching. Could you explain a little bit of that?
Well, back in those days, especially the Negro Leagues, and when he played in the Latin American countries, the more positions you played, the more money you made. So if it wasn't his turn to pitch, he would play third base. And I mean, there's numerous times that he pitched, and he hit for average, hit 330, 350 in different leagues and different seasons. So that was one of the reasons that he loved playing in the Negro Leagues, because the money that he could make there was greater than he could make anywhere else at that time. And plus, his heart was with the Negro Leagues, and his friends played in the Negro Leagues. So he always always said that that meant a lot to him.
Now, some of his friends you were mentioning earlier, was Satchel Paige is one of them?
Well, Satchel was a lot older than my dad, but I met Satchel in Cooperstown, New York, where the Baseball Hall of Fame is, and he was actually getting inducted, and he's one of the great pitchers for the Negro Leagues over history. And you know, we went up, and I was a kid at the time, and I remember going up and speaking to Satchel, and you know, different ball players, you know, Piper Davis and Artie Wilson and Double Duty Radcliffe, and it's amazing that I met these people. And at the time I met them, I knew that they played baseball, but I didn't know where they were in history at that time. So he was very close. When we would go on the reunions and we'd run into all these different Negro League ball players, it was just pretty amazing just to sit at a table with him and just talk to him.
Now he played for a little over a decade, around a decade, and the book, My Life in the Negro Leagues, exactly when was that written?
That was written, and it was published in 92. My father retired in 59 from playing baseball altogether. And then he worked for the government. He was a counselor for drug addicts and alcoholics. And then once he retired from the government, he came home. And John Holloway, who has written numerous books on the Negro Leagues, sort of influenced him to write this book. And he just started writing it and putting it together. And he sent it to a company called Meckler out of Connecticut. And they agreed to publish it. And that was sort of a, you know, when that day came, it was pretty incredible that my, you know, you look back at your dad and say, oh, he just wrote a book.
Now your father, he inspired you too. In fact, you were mentioning at one point you and your father's lives parallels each other quite closely. You were born when and where?
I was born in Manassas, Virginia, in 1959. I never, ever got a chance to see my father play in a professional game, but I did get a chance to see him play in, like, reunion games and stuff like that. And he coached me in baseball, you know, from the time I think we were 7 to 18. And but I also played basketball, and I ended up getting a Division I scholarship to play basketball in college, and it was pretty amazing. I was 400 miles. I went to Providence College, and 400 miles away, he was at every home game, and sometimes on the road, I didn't expect him. I'd look up in the stands, and he would be there. So we were very close when it came to, you know, going through life.
It's sort of a like wonderful the old guy. Saying, a chip off the old block.
Yeah, well, if I'm a chip off his block, I'm a lucky person.
You're listening to KBOO, the Black Book Talk, and our guest here is Billy Fields, and we're talking about his father, Wilma Red Fields, and his book, My Life in the Negro Leagues. Tell me, you had other siblings, and you say that they were able to witness your father play?
Yes, I have had an older sister who's now deceased, and I do have an older brother who lives in Florida now. They were actually born in the time when my dad was playing ball and had the opportunity to travel, especially when he was playing in the winter leagues, to the Dominican Republic, to Mexico, and they had the opportunity to take all that in. Now, when he was with the Grays, he wasn't that far away from Northern Virginia. So, you know, weekends, maybe they would go up and see him play, but they would come home because they had to go to school.
So after the regular season for the Negro Leagues, then he traveled abroad and played for several teams. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yes, he played played in Venezuela, played in Colombia, Dominican Republic, Panama, Cuba, Mexico. Those were his, and he played in Puerto Rico, and I think he would, what he was doing, once he got down there, you had to have a pretty good seasons here in the States to be able to go down there and make good money. And, you know, he would take ball players off the grades with him to go play on these teams, and they would go down there and play in the Winter League and then come back for the season for the Grays.
It says that in 1947, he batted .286 for Homestead. And the following season, he hit .311 for the Grays. Now, in addition to pitching, he was a right-hander, is that correct?
Yes, he was a right-hander.
And he also batted right-handed?
Yes, he also batted right-handed.
Why isn't it we're not taught about people such as your father?
I think, you know, I was around to see where the Negro League itself was not being recognized at all. And then something, you know, just sort of came out of nowhere. Someone wrote a book, and then people got interested in it. And then in the 90s, late 80s, early 90s, it really took off because, I mean, the Major League properties, different baseball card companies were flying these ball players around to do autograph shows, speaking engagements. So it turned out to be a really incredible experience for these guys because there's not too many of them left that actually played in the Negro Leagues now.
And he lived until 95, you say?
My father?
Yes.
He passed on June 4th, 2004.
2004?
Yes.
Wow. At the age of...
82.
82 years old.
Yes.
So he wrote the book when he was in his 60s?
Yes. Yeah. And then from that... the organization became larger. They were getting notarized by different companies, and then they started, you know, their Negro League association, and my father was elected president. And through this association, they received funding from the Major League properties, of health benefits for the ball players, the Negro League ball players and their spouses. And also, I'm thinking that it was a four-year cutoff. If you played 4 years in the Negro Leagues, then you received a pension from the Major League properties, which was really incredible because a lot of those ball players were struggling, you know, and this really helped them out.
4 years is a participant in the Negro League solely or a combination of these various leagues?
I believe it was in the Negro Leagues.
Okay, so the major leagues decided that they would work with your father and his group for a pension plan?
Yes, and they received the pension plan and they received the health benefits pretty simultaneously. I mean, it worked out. It was really incredible. And then, you know, Dad was really proud that he got that because he loved the guys that, you know, when they would get together on their reunions, that they would sit and talk for hours and hours and hours. And it was, you could just tell the closeness and the love that was between them about what they experienced together back in the 40s and 50s.
How would someone come about getting a copy of your father's book?
I could give you an email address.
Okay.
And they could email me, and I can give them. I have the hard book autographed with his autograph in it, and then I have just the regular book. If they can email me, do you want me to give you my email address?
Yes, go right ahead.
Okay, it's BF. MANASSAS@AOL.com.
Very good. This is KBOO Black Book Talk, a special edition on baseball. In fact, this is October now, and we're getting into that part of the season where the World Series will be coming up pretty soon. Did the National Negro League have an equivalent to the World Series?
Well, they had their league World Series, yes, for the Negro Leagues, and they had an all-star game just like the Major League properties. It was more or less a copycat of what the Major Leagues they were doing at that time. So they, you know, they had their World Series just like the Major League did.
And your father also served, took some time out and served in the Army, is that correct?
Yes, from 1943 to 1945, he was in the Army. And then he came back in 46 and had his best, I would think, from on paper. I wasn't there, but on paper, that was one of his best years, because he went 16-1 as a pitcher. And he made the All-Star team that year also.
Oh, very good. Your father's pitching, he says somewhere where when you went to pitch then, you had to stay in the game. They didn't have enough people to come in as relief pitchers?
Well, I think the mentality back then was different. You know, now in the major leagues, you go out, you have a person who's a starter and goes out and gives you five or six innings, he's done his work for the day. You know, back then, you know, you had pitchers that would pitch nine innings and come back on two or three days rest and pitch another nine innings. So the whole, I mean, they're taking care of the ball players now the way that they're handling them. But back then, I mean, it was pretty, it was rough, you know, for you to play in the league, and especially if you were trying to make a good living by pitching, and then the next day after you pit through nine innings, you're playing third base. You don't see that today.
That's for sure. Now, he's a contemporary of Jackie Robinson, who played for the Kansas City Monarchs and then, of course, was recruited by Brent Ritchie and then ended up playing with the Brooklyn Dodgers. And even at that point in time, they were still struggling to keep the league alive?
Well, I think Jackie Robinson going into the major leagues sort of opened the door, because I know the following year some other ball players came in, and then once Jackie Robinson was successful, then it opened up the rest of the major leagues' eyes, which I think, to saying, okay, we need to do this, you know, because there were good ball players in the Negro Leagues. But, you know, about Jackie Robinson, I think, you know, I asked Dad, I said, well, why did they pick him? You know, why did they pick Jackie Robinson instead of somebody else? And he said he was the best person to step up to put himself in that situation, because that was a trying time for anyone who was going to step up to the major leagues.
So where do you go from here? You are trying to not only promote the book, but then what else do you do with your time?
I have I'm a general contractor. I have a company, and it's my dad's and mine's initials is WLF Contracting. And, you know, people call and they always ask me to, you know, speak or to bring something to show schools or something like that. I know my dad, when he wrote the book, he did not write it for a financial gain. He just wanted to put his story out there so kids, because he loved kids, the kids could read it from forever. And so anytime a request comes, I always try to follow through with it, because I know that if he was here, that's what he would do.
Now, he's was not only a great ball player, but he was forward-looking, and you were sort of stepping in his shoes and following his pattern. Where do you go from here now with the type of work you're doing on your father's behalf?
Well, his book has gone to ebooks, and you know, if I'm asked to speak, I you know, I will do that. I'm not. I really don't go out and promote, you know, his book or anything like that. But people have called me, and the situation has turned out favorable, you know, to get his book out there so people can read it, because that's what he wanted. And so, any, like I said, anything that happens that I can promote Negro League baseball or my father, I'm very open toward.
Now, you mentioned you did not know that your father was even a baseball player.
No, I did not know growing up in the household. I've heard him talk, him and my mother speak about it a little bit. But he coached me from the time I was 8 years old to 18 baseball. And at one point, you know, all the players on the team, you know, we were sitting around and, you know, they were talking about, like, you know, your father knows a lot more baseball than the average person. And come to find out, you know, he played baseball. And I really didn't know it, and he never talked about it. He's not that type of person. You know, he's not a type of person that's going to throw his accomplishments in your face. You know, if you want to look at him, he's so, you know, the book's right there, you can see what he did, but he's not the type of person, unless he's asked to speak about himself, that would just come out and say anything about himself. It's just something that was sort of the way he handled his life.
This has really been a pleasure. I enjoy this baseball. In fact, today has a distinction of being on this day in 1974, the Cleveland Indians hired a manager named Frank Robinson, and he became the first African American manager in Major League Baseball. So, coming from the National Negro League all the way to the major leagues, and now we see all on TV, colleges and universities, black players. It's a completely different ball game. Is that correct?
Oh, yes. I think that, you know, for those who paved the way for all this to happen with the, you see, you know, the black college coaches at the major Division I schools now, and coaching in Division I football, the NFL, and major. I mean, the people who paved the way, I don't think, such as Jackie Robinson, I don't think, or Frank Robinson, they do not get enough credit. Because if it wasn't for them, all this would have never happened.
Well, you've said a lot, and it means a lot. We're talking to Billy Fields, the son of Wilmer Red Fields. And the book is My Life in the Negro Leagues. And I'd like to thank you very much for sharing the information with us. And hopefully sometime we may even look at having you here in Portland in the future.
I would look forward to that.
Very good. Take care now.
Oh, you take care of yourself.
Okay.
This is KBOO Portland.
Good morning, listeners. This is DK Home, and this is Film at 11, as usual, at 10:30. It's the weekly panel show reviewing various small and large screen offerings. This week we've got Britta, Jeff, and Matthew. And but first I'm going to start with two books. One about Oliver Stone called The Oliver Stone Experience. You may recall that I discussed his memoir last week. And the second one is another memoir, this one by John Borman, the British director of Zardoz, Point Blank, Hope and Glory, and Deliverance. So, as mentioned, I'd like to discuss two more books about movie directors. The first one is The Oliver Stone Experience, and it's edited by Matt Zoller Seitz, and it was published by Abrams about a year and a half ago or so. And being from Abrams is, of course, filled with art, photographs, pages of scripts.